Hello, hello. You're listening to Word Goblins, as usual, with your most favorite goblins ever, Natasha.
Hello.
How's it going?
Sleepy goblins today. I think we're entering hibernation.
Yeah. The sun's out, though,
so I'm happy. The sun is out. Yeah, the sun is out, and it is helpful, but it is not enough. I feel like it could just, like, turn up the volume, like, a little bit. And maybe these goblins would be far more hostile. I would like to engage in, like, hostile goblin mode for, like, a little bit of this episode. But I think I'm going to stay here at this voice with this tempo.
Okay.
How are you feeling today?
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Growth. Yeah, I am.
Degeneration, actually.
I'm disassociating and
nice. Love that.
Feeling less aggro, so we both are on the same wavelength.
And with that in mind, do you want to introduce our topic today?
Yes. But before that, you're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, dear listener, broadcasting live from the traditional ancestral and unceded land of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. So what are we talking about today?
Throwing it back at me, I see what you did. Okay.
I feel so sneaky.
It's like, that's not going to go unnoticed. Well, today we're talking about catchphrases, which is a slight deviation from our typical mode of operation here on Word Goblins, which is we choose a word to talk about and we expand on it and we break it apart. And this time, we're talking about a category of words, a combination of words. It's a little bit of a jump from where we normally are, but I think it's interesting nonetheless. And there's quite a bit to talk about here in terms of, like, media and culture. Mm-hmm. And essentially, what we want to do is talk about what happened to catchphrases.
What happened to them? So, before that, I just quickly want to mention we played two songs right at the top of the hour. The first one was Butch Things by Warm Drag, and the second one was Someone to Love by Drug Dealer. So on to the topic for today. I will say it's a loosey-goosey topic, mm-hmm. and that's okay. Tasha and I are both known to be nostalgic and just yearning dudes. I don't know what to tell you. And so it seems fitting that we wanted to just go down the memory lane. And while you were talking, I was also realizing a lot of our topics, as much we have a love-hate relationship with internet trends, are often can be tied to social media, we can trace it back to this year, the past couple of years, but for this episode, we're really going back into the 90s and early aughts and before the rise of platform media, essentially, and talking about pop culture phrases, iconic lines that you would just code at each other all the time, and somehow united us. And pretty much everyone was not living under a rock would know what you're referring to. And so it had that mass appeal to it. I will want to open this by the first phrase, which I was looking up. According to American Film Institute, they did a little survey with 1,500 folks comprising of film critics, directors, screenwriters and all that, and the phrase that got voted as the most iconic line of all times was, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn," from Gone with the Wind.
Do you know what it was up against?
I don't know, but I would be curious to see what else was there.
Yeah, because I mean, there are probably so many decades of these catchphrases mm-hmm. to account for. And I imagine while that is, like, a recognizable line, a film just having been around long enough would probably garner the most recognizability, just sheer fact of it existing for so long. But that is interesting because I think a lot of the catchphrases that were pretty prominent during this time, probably right up until the 2010s when catchphrases started dropping off, were mostly from films. I would say like film TV is where a lot of them come from, given we do have some examples that are not from film, and I'm certain that there are much more, but I think the majority of the most quotable slogans are things that were written for film and TV.
Absolutely. Film, TV, and then music.
Music.
So...
advertising.
Since you asked about what was the criteria of American Film Institute, they had 100 quotes, and the way they described famous is what was the most memorable American movie quote. And I'm curious actually what was their criteria. So they had three selection criteria. The first was movie quotation, so a statement, phrase, or brief exchange of dialogue spoken in an American film. Lyrics from songs are not eligible. Okay, never mind my example. cultural impact, so movie quotations that viewers use in their own lives and situations, circulating through popular culture, they become part of the national lexicon. And perhaps I would also say have a life of their its own, which is something that we have been talking about. And then the third is legacy, movie quotations that viewers use to evoke the memory of a treasured film, thus ensuring and reliving its historical legacy.
Yeah, those are almost two opposite ways of engaging with a catchphrase. One being like you use it to evoke the direct film, and it's almost like when you say it, you want to communicate to who you're saying it to that you are talking about this cultural moment. It's almost like you're trying to communicate taste or like choice. But then the other way of using catchphrase is like the direct opposite, because you sever ties from what it's from and you completely recontextualize it. And the point of that catchphrase is just to like morph over time. Which I think with the examples of film and TV, it's really hard to decontextualize them. Most of the time, those catchphrases are used to just signify the object. I think when it comes to like the music and advertising, et cetera, little phrases that we've pulled out, those ones are often decontextualized and not used to say like, hey, remember this ad? Like, you too have seen this ad. I think it's more like you're just repurposing it.
Why do you think it's easy to separate the phrase from the source with music, for example, and not for a film?
Number one, I have no idea.
But keeping it real.
Yeah. I mean, because they're both, it's both approaches are like measured writing. Like someone sat and wrote these, whether for a song, whether for a script for advertising, or for a movie. Perhaps with movies and TV, they're just longer and they're fuller stories. Yeah, I think because there's stories attached to those phrases, and maybe we can't ignore the context because we're very familiar with stories, whereas a song is less of a story. It can be, certainly, but it's not like 2 hours worth of a story, you know?
Yeah, and something, again, I don't know, but I do have my own analysis. I'm thinking that one of the reasons could be that with film and TV, we have strong visuals attached to it. And so it's very much frozen in time versus music is fluid because there are no visuals. And audio storytelling can be way more open to imagination. And you could assign it to like the time and place you heard it versus like who said it.
So something that immediately comes to mind is just the example of the movie Mean Girls from, like, what, 2004? Which I'm going to place in my timeline of catchphrases as, like, the ending movie. The movie that was, like, the end of catchphrases because it, A, had so many, and then, B, after that, I truly can't think of another example of a movie or a TV show that provided so many ubiquitous sloganeering. We actually brought this up in a staff meeting and we asked people for examples of catchphrases from a movie specifically or from TV, and no one had any examples.
No.
It could have just been fatigue because, you know, it's work. Yeah. But I also do think it's a little bit illustrative of the fact that we just don't have any modern examples of movies, TV that have like stuck with everyone so vividly. But I mean, Mean Girls itself is responsible for Get In, Loser. It's responsible for They Don't Even Go Here. Mm-hmm. It's responsible for I'm a Mouse, Duh. It's responsible for That's So Fetch. There's too many.
Stop trying to make Fetch happen, Gretchen.
Exactly.
It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. And then it didn't because catchphrases stopped happening.
Honestly, the foreshadowing?
Yeah.
Iconic.
The other one I think that is important to mention is I think The Simpsons gave us so much, especially from Bart Simpson. Mm-hmm. Don't Have a Cow Man was like the 90s in a nutshell. Eat My Shorts, obviously. Like that show itself, and given I can only sort of quote a few, I feel like that is another moment when TV just kind of exploded with this sloganeering potential. The likes of we haven't really seen in a while. I can't think of another TV show that had done that so vividly.
So something that absolutely. TV, and especially I'm thinking of the sitcom era, and it's dead.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a controversial take. Don't sue me, please. But I'm talking long running sitcoms that had fully 10 years of airtime, which is crazy to think about. Extremely popular million-dollar shows, like I'm thinking of Seinfeld and Friends, and the catchphrase from Friends, "We were on a break," which often has been, it's interesting because if you get a bunch of people together, they would have, it's almost like a fodder for discussion in the sense, like, were they on a break or were they not on a break? And so it has, like, an afterlife in that sense. I'm thinking of Seinfeld had some golden lines, and there was one where George screams, "We live in a society," which I think is iconic. And I don't see that anymore. Things don't stick as they used to. And because we're just in an ocean of content, there's just too much out there. We live in an attention economy. We're all like a goldfish. We just very quickly move on to the next thing. It's just really that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So what do you think makes a good catchphrase?
Great question. As I was quoting Seinfeld that I recently, a couple of years ago, I rewatched the entire thing, it's almost that the screenwriters wanted these to become catchphrases. They were written, like the writing was just different. It was very much like slapstick comedy, sitcom situation. And something else about sitcoms to be noted is that you can watch those episodes. Yes, there's a storyline, there's a through line of narrative, but they're also independent. You could watch episode 8 of season 10 and still be okay without really, but you could figure out in that scene of like what the dynamic is between, say, again, Seinfeld, for example, versus now. We don't really have sitcoms. The writing budgets are slashed, I guess, with the writer's strike. Like, that's been emblematic of that. TV shows are way shorter. We have a plethora of content, but the duration is way shorter. So even if a TV show has 3 seasons, that's a lot. Often TV shows just get canceled. They have fewer episodes, and they try to pack a lot within, say, like 10 episodes. And I don't know, are they like perhaps not really trying to encompass or trying to use that formula of like, oh, this can be standalone, or just even like this one line that like lands with people, or it it hits like that. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think that was a really interesting answer, because you kind of touched on something there that was like, I think catchphrases are a way of like distilling a character into like a pithy phrase. Mm-hmm. And you got to think about why that is being written, like why someone is putting a lot of effort into giving characters these like sort of one-liners that will describe who their character is. And you're right, it's because of the format, and it's also because of culture. The format being probably mostly sitcoms, and then culture generally is that these are being shown on cable TV, and mm-hmm. you kind of just drop in when you can, and you don't get to choose when you're watching or how long you're watching. So they are written to be kind of like watched or consumed at whatever point, and that you can understand where you are in a TV show whenever you drop into it. It's a certain kind of writing for a certain kind of show. The way that we engage with TV media generally now is that you get set aside time way like far easier when you're going to watch a show. You are far more engaged because you're kind of in control of the whole experience. You're not watching it at the same time as everybody. You're sort of like on your own. Mm-hmm. But the need to make it immediately understandable from any point in time in which someone could tune in, it's not as necessary because people are choosing it. They're not just flipping through channels. So I think the nature of how we watch TV has changed how people write characters. And so characters don't need to be like parroting off a line all the time so that you understand who they are quickly and easily. Mm-hmm. Given that type of writing can be used for creative purposes, it just is not being used to sell TV.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely there. And also, like, there's no time to do that, right? Mm-hmm. The format is, again, way shorter. It's way different. The story is given. Yes, the stories have gotten way more complex. And to just even look back, a lot of episodes, and yeah, I will say I romanticize that. A lot of episodes with, again, going back to sitcoms, there would be nothing happening, really. But I can't imagine watching, again, I don't know sitcom. I can't even think of a recent sitcom. I mean, I don't know. The last one that comes to mind is Community. But then there is just something happening for each episode. And also, yeah, something else that came to mind of like what has changed is we're in a binge watching era. We're in cable television. Doesn't really exist anymore. Millennials, Gen Zs, like we are in the era of streaming platforms. Again, binge watch something, not going to land, you move on, even if it's great TV. And I would think of it more as like, oh yeah, this is a great show. Do watch it. Move on to the next one.
Can you imagine binge watching a sitcom that utilized catchphrases? And how often you would have to hear those things and how annoyed you would be as a viewer to have that character continually doing that during a like mm-hmm. 1 to 2 hour session of watching something. It's just the landscape is totally different.
That would be insufferable.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the point. Mm-hmm. You would watch one episode, simple times, episode Wednesday, 8 p.m. and then have to wait 1 week like mm-hmm. a pleb in the 90s, I imagine.
It's a good way to keep people hooked as well, because I think, you know, waiting a week until you can hear that character do that thing again, it's almost like a little reward for waiting.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't need rewards anymore.
No. And also there was this Community because literally everyone was watching the same thing because it was on cable television. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the time? I remember fully my aunt, who is really into South Asian soap operas, would be, and this is again decades ago, she would be talking about episodes with her friends on the phone and be like, what do you think is going to happen in the next episode?
Yeah, I also kind of just for a nostalgia moment, like I remember calling people to say, hey, on channel 3, like whatever is playing right now, tune in, and then you would just kind of like watch at the same time on the phone.
Yeah.
Like, you can line that shit up now if you wanted to. You could be talking to someone on Discord, and then you could also, like, you could hit play on your stream at the same time, yeah. But it's not quite the same as calling your friend and being like, MTV's playing our song right now. You need to turn on to channel 3.
MTV's playing Pimp My Ride. Get on it.
Yeah.
Oh, fully. I remember the OC, and given that it was before, or I was younger when it was airing, but it would re-airing on one of the channels, and my friend and I would coordinate watching it and then have a whole discussion sesh.
Yeah, after. I think it's like that energy is probably what was also in the brew for catchphrases to like be really latched onto, is because you had to put so much time and effort into watching things together at the same time. You didn't want to miss it. You were waiting since like last week. There's a care there that I don't think that I have anymore. It's usually, you know, someone will tell me to watch something and then maybe a couple weeks later I'll find it and decide to sit down and finally watch it. But it's not as in the moment. It's not as planned. It's not as careful. And so maybe those lines don't stick out as much. But I also suspect that there's more going on here as well than just like, we're not all watching things at the same time and different content is being made now. We're out of an era of sitcoms. We're out of an era of like the necessity for like really pithy character writing.
Mm-hmm.
We have different forms of media, so that's something. We have less gatekept media, so that's also something.
Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, like as nostalgic as I feel sometimes, and we all do, there is way more diversity now. Folks have way more autonomy. There are less hoops to jump through. It's less gatekept, yes. And also, there's just so much out there. Mm-hmm. I definitely get stressed. But also, there is something for everyone.
Yeah.
And there are very, like, yeah, we can make the argument that pop culture and that form of pop culture is dead in the sense there are niche fan bases versus all of us consuming something at the same time, simultaneously, and the writing is very intentional because they wanted to land a certain way, and it's not really open for interpretation. Like, we know what's going on. We know these characters, like, oh, this person's the butt of the joke, or this person's a jock. Like, those very, like, typecasted characters. But also, given that, I don't know, like, yeah, you're right. I don't know if I put in that much care. I mean, I love film and TV, but I can also be very detached towards it because there is so much going on all the time, but also there are all these other distractions. Like, the kind of running meme of, like, I'm on my big screen 9 to 5 and then I go home on my small screen.
Oh, yeah. I call that good screen and bad screen. But it's just me bringing my laptop to work and that's bad screen. And I bring my laptop home and play games and that's good screen.
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We definitely live in a society.
We live in a society of screens. And it's wild. I am watching TV, but I'm also on my phone. And yeah, we didn't have smartphones before. Well, we didn't have much to distract us with.
Yeah. So that, I think that's the other component as to why catchphrases are perhaps dead or changed indefinitely, is just because we have so much media and we have so many kinds of media. And the other thing that I was thinking was when sitcoms are being written, these characters are being distilled. This is like slow writing for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think now a lot of writing happens really quickly because it's really competitive. And it may not just be writing for, like, when you can, for like Netflix or whatever. It's also writing for like YouTube or even shorter form content on TikTok. People are certainly writing, right? But it's fast writing. We're no longer consuming media that was written very slowly over a long period of time. We're consuming media that was perhaps written like more hastily because there's so much more out there.
Yeah, or people doing lives. Like, that's the epitome of being just spontaneous. Like, oh, here's my phone. And then that video goes viral. And then that's content. So, like, content is just so loose now. Like, everything and anything is content, really.
Yeah.
And all of those different contents, those different mediums are asking for attention simultaneously, which, again, wasn't so much the case if we talk about 90s even and early aughts. And there was that, like, TV, for example, had our attention.
And it would come out over, like, maybe you'd get one or two things a year that were directly quotable, whereas now I would put us in, like, we would get quotable things weekly now. So it's fast, and we just have way more to account for. So we're not all saying the same things, the same slogans or catchphrases, because we didn't get one blockbuster movie that we're all quoting. We, in fact, have all watched different things at different times every damn day. There's just more. I think that's the argument, is there's just more. Therefore, we have less in common to quote to each other.
Yeah. There is also this sort of weirdly privacy of, like, I could be watching four shows right now, and if I talk to you, you could perhaps never heard of those shows, or even if you did, you're watching four entire different shows, which, like, imagine that in, like, the 80s and 90s. It's like, no, we were pretty much, again, watching the same thing. And so we're sort of in our own silos, with obviously, like, everyone owning a laptop now, individual laptop for individual use. We all have smartphones. Mm-hmm. And so there is that kind of, we have that independency of, like, watching whatever we want, versus I remember when we were young, we would have to, like, me and my siblings would fight over what movie we're gonna play, and it's like, oh, we've seen Mulan too many times, like, let's watch Lion King. That's not happening right now. It's like, okay, you go watch your thing, I'm gonna go watch my thing.
Yeah, people in households don't necessarily all have to be watching the same thing.
Yeah,
given I still think that we, like, congregate around media in that way, but, like, you would almost by necessity have to be watching what people in your house were watching.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, it was cool to, like, bond in that way of, like, oh, I didn't realize, like, I would actually like this movie. But now it's very much also that there's also so much fluidity of, like, things, I don't even know, like, what came first. And then things, I mean, yeah, things go viral all the time, and we have catchphrases, but they're coming from, again, social media, platform media, from TikTok, from Instagram. I don't know, someone, like, posted something. And also, these folks are not celebrities. Like, a lot of things that we're coding are, like, everyday people.
Yeah, and I mean, this is something that I wanted to make, I guess, as a kind of distinction in this episode, is that I do think, like, catchphrases themselves are gone. I think catchphrases are gone, but soundbite culture is not gone. And I think we're operating in a sort of, like, soundbite world, where we're all sort of, like, parroting different, like, words or smaller phrases that we've heard from people over, like, a vast majority of things, rather than quoting bits of like, writing from a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Also, something that I totally lost my train of thought.
Well,
I'll come back to it.
I think we've found a way to keep sharing these strange words and moments in culture that we have in common, and a way to keep doing this sort of catchphrase thing that we've been doing as the media landscape has changed underneath us. And it has just changed to be smaller groups, more niche groups of people saying very specific things that their favorite Twitch streamer says, or that, you know, you picked up from a, like, beauty blogger or something, you know, like, the landscape has significantly changed and become more fractured, and we're all looking at different things at different times and more things, which means when you choose to use catchphrases, if we want to even call it that anymore, or rather if you are speaking sound bites aloud, it's not likely it's going to land with everybody in the room. You may catch one person who
will be like, haha.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not a principle that everyone organizes around.
No, definitely not. It has become way more esoteric, and we speak in memes, little TikTok reels. Something that came to mind right away when we were discussing this topic, and I feel like if I go into it, I will not be able to stop. So perhaps we'll take a break.
Yeah, okay. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, if there are callers, we will take a call. If not, Hina will get into what is on her mind.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Discover Noreen Braun's album Songs for Trees, dedicated to the forests and the spirits within the trees. As we fight climate change, trees are the lungs of the planet and we need to help them. Her jazz and blues are blended with rock and synthesized pop elements to create a textured and ambient soundtrack to nature. Songs for Trees is a narrative, with each song guiding us through a journey through the forest. A trip, literally and metaphorically, about the interconnectedness of all things. The Vancouver Sun names it one of 5 albums you need to hear. Find out more at noreenbraun.com.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Where do you go to cry? Where do you go to scream? Where do you go to sing at the top of your lungs and play instruments and be free? You can join UBC Cry Club. UBC Cry Club provides instruments and a judgment-free zone for people to let loose and be free using music as therapy. UBC Cry Club meets at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays at the Fraser River Parkade. For more information, go to M01E on Instagram.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into We're Goblins with your favorite goblins ever.
Sleepy goblins reporting for duty, talking about catchphrases.
Yeah, and their death, alleged death.
Are they dead? Have they changed? Why do we use catchphrases?
Why don't we use catchphrases? What's going on?
Yeah.
This is getting a bit existential. Which is very welcome.
Yeah. Just before the break, we had been discussing the plight of the sitcom, which is probably where most of our catchphrases have stemmed from.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how the media landscape has changed and how that has changed how we sloganeer to one another and how we've moved into a culture of sound bites over catchphrases. And I think ultimately all of these things, whether you want to call it a soundbite or a catchphrase, they are chances to participate in comedy without having to be the one that has written it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a way to communicate with each other about these things that we have shared in common, even though the media landscape is now at such a state where we don't have as many things in common, just because there is so much and there is less gatekeeping. There are so many different kinds. That's kind of where we're at in this long-winded discussion.
Yeah.
Which probably has more to do with what we're going to call catchphrases and less about what they are specifically, because I think maybe we are just calling it the wrong thing.
Well, this is... Okay, so something that came to mind, one of the films that was very popular, Forrest Gump,
mm-hmm.
and I think in it had a few lines and perhaps arguably not catchphrases, but like quotes that were huge and everyone had it on their whatever, Tumblr or photos. I mean, this is like way before Tumblr, but there this one quote about something about, like, my mama says life is like a box of chocolates. You never know where you're going to get. And I think that one I have seen or used to see in so many places where even if you didn't know the origin of this code, you could still relate to it. And so getting severed from its origin
mm-hmm.
is an example. And yeah. Maybe not catchphrases, like one-liners, dialogues.
Yeah, what has changed from a catchphrase to the era of soundbites is primarily that they've been severed from their sources. They're very much decontextualized. And it's harder to do that with film and TV, especially if we only have a couple big movies that we've all watched. You can't really pull it away from its sources, but... There are sometimes these catchphrases that take on a life of their own,
mm-hmm.
and they're no longer attached to the media from whence they came.
Yeah.
And I think you have a very good example of one.
It's Britney, bitch.
Which, when we originally talked about it, was it you? We were talking about this, and you didn't realize that it was from a song?
Mm-hmm.
When it was, it's just become, it's part of lexicon. It is just a way of organizing. It's a
fun fact.
Spiritual experience. And yeah, it is from a song, which she begins the song by saying, "It's Britney, bitch." It was after a long hiatus. And mm-hmm. It's pretty badass, honestly.
Britney is God. You said spiritual, so Britney Spears, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good example of the turn to sound bites. And how they can be used in conversation that are kind of pulled away from their original sources. Although she refers to herself as simply Britney, only first name. And I think Britney Spears is someone that we can refer to as Britney and all know who we're talking about.
And it's a common name.
Yeah.
And there's so many Britneys in Hollywood, but you're right.
You can't decontextualize Britney. So it's not fully, you know, severed, but it's this moment where it started to become, you could just throw that in mid-conversation.
I have a fun fact for you.
Yeah.
So this song was the opening verse in Gimme More, which came out in 2007. That was after Britney Spears' very public meltdown after her breakup. And then she shaved her head and was really harassed and pestered by the paparazzis and the tabloid culture. And this song was her big comeback. Some even call it, or wait, maybe it was just me calling it the origin story 2.0. But really just reclaiming her identity and redefining who she is, taking autonomy. Because we know that with all the discourse around Britney Spears, that the media has been very sexist towards her. One of the early really big pop stars, and you know, I don't know if this is too if I'm reaching too far, but even if we talk about pop stars, is the culture of pop stars dead, or maybe it has shifted a lot? And so Britney Spears was asked about this phrase in an interview in 2016, and even she forgot about it. She's like, oh, I don't remember how this came about. And an interview she did in, so it's kind of hilarious and like very meta, where she's like, oh, I don't know. Like,
I just said it and it took off.
Yeah. Like, I don't control that. And when she was asked in 2007 or 8, when it was like everyone was saying it, it has been sampled in many songs. Jay-Z sampled it in a song. It was her and her producer writing the lyrics or whatever. And it just felt like, again, also it was about, she called, quote, like, say, attaching bitch to like after her name almost as if it were her last name, but also again reclaiming the B word, which is used as an insult for a woman, we know that. And it was 2007, so like it hadn't really been reclaimed then. And then using it as a term of endearment for herself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool and badass. And also, yeah, so I was telling Tasha that as someone who's watched The Office, American Office, many times, one of the iconic scenes in the TV show, and The Office has given us many catchphrases as well, was when Michael Scott starts his own company, Michael Scott Paper Company, and people don't trust him, and he has a comeback in that scene where he's driving a red sports car and there's a Lady Gaga's Just Dance playing in the car, and then he says it's Britney, bitch.
And I'm like, and that was your intro to
mm-hmm.
the phrase, proving that this thing kind of warps and can be like used in various contexts and means different things and refers to different things the longer it's used. So, I mean, really, Britney started a massive movement in culture without really trying to. Iconic. Women have always been at the
forefront
of forming culture and language, and that is a fact.
Absolutely. our TikTok girlies are doing it. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so much, giving us so much, again, fodder for discussion, to talk about quotes, catchphrases, sound bites, and also, what's interesting about, again, going back to is Britney, bitch, is I don't think, yes, they take a life of its own, but the legacy still continues off reclamation and really being assertive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, with everything that Britney had gone through, being very controlled. Her father was very controlling. And what was the thing, that recent case that happened, that she was finally like free to
the conservatorship?
Exactly. So that. So it's also like there is that kind of story attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime it's used It's also like if a character is having a comeback, it's like a reference to this point in time, which we really saw unfold, because again, TMZ, paparazzi culture. And so I like that it was a big, like, F you to, I don't know, the folks who were being mean.
Folks that were holding her back. Yeah, I think what's cool about that, beyond her just being kind of badass in that moment, was that it's... I think this is maybe like too far, but forgive me and whatever. It's my show. I can say it. I think catchphrases are always pointing to something. They're always pointing to a character that said something or a TV show. And that's when you're using a catchphrase, when you're saying like, don't have a cow, man, you're really talking about Bart Simpson. Like that, it's pretty direct. It's a directive. Whereas now in the... realm of soundbite culture and it's Britney bitch, there's like subtext to these soundbites that is not directly talking about Britney Spears. In that example, you're talking to a sort of like emancipation or like a speaking to power. There is like an ethos behind it, and soundbites have the ability to change context but hold an ethos, whereas catchphrases mostly just have the ability to point towards a cultural object to be like, see this thing? I liked this thing. Do you like this thing too? And so I kind of like the era of soundbites. I mean, better obviously with the way that I'm framing this is that I do have more faith in the soundbite era because I like to utilize language that way, whereas I'm less inclined to use catchphrases to point to things that I like just to show other people that I also like the thing.
Says the person who quotes Mean Girls all the time.
Yeah, I know.
But other than that, that's an exception.
Yeah, I think that's what the difference is.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, too, when I'm using Mean Girls quotes, I'm changing them up to suit my needs in conversation, and I find that fun and exciting.
Yeah.
Whereas it's less about, like, remember this funny part from this movie? Do you remember it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So there's sort of a difference there. And that maybe is just because we have so many voices saying so many things all the time that we can pick and choose. And we've heard things over and over again. When you have so many sound bites, you almost get very bored of things that are said too often. And I mean, catchphrases can be annoying in that way. They had been annoying in the early aughts.
Yeah.
There are things that you just wish people would just like lay off of, you know, just certain things. You're like, can we all stop saying this now? And I think that's because we had less examples.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. Something that was huge and everyone was saying this, courtesy Dr. Phil, Cash Me Outside, how about that?
Oh, I forgot about that one.
who the person, she goes by Bad Barbie now.
Great.
And yeah, so this very troubled teenager who's on the show. And apparently this TV show came out in, not the TV show, sorry, the episode. When did it even come out?
I mean, Dr. Phil's been around since the 90s, but this was fairly recent. This might be towards the end of our timeline. This is perhaps the end of the catchphrase timeline.
That's so fresh.
Yeah.
That's wild. And she became a meme, essentially. And I will say, I was like, can people stop?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, no, I agree. It's, I think of like, may the force be with you, for example, and people just saying that all the time. And also it was very much to signal to the other person, yeah, I'm a Star Wars buff or a Star Wars geek. But I do like to have a cheeky moment where I'm watching something obscure and then I find like one person at a party who is into that and having a little conversation on the side versus having to talk about it on a loudspeaker with everyone.
I don't know if you've ever witnessed this happen to you, but sometimes I've been in situations where one person will quote something, they will do the catchphrase to point at the thing that they like. The other person that's there happens to know the thing that they're pointing at, so they quote something else. And then these two people kind of have this back and forth where they quote a bunch of other things at each other, and you're standing there having no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Fandoms operate this way.
Yeah, it's awkward. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. Bye. You know, I have an analogy, mm-hmm. and tell me how you feel
about
it.
Let's do it. I love analogies.
I know. Okay. Catchphrases and pop culture slogans used to be headlines, but now they're sidebars.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense to me.
As the editor of Discorder magazine, do you approve?
Wow, don't dox me like this.
I say that lovingly.
Yeah, they are written in the margins,
mm-hmm.
for sure. They're not
on the
headlines.
Yeah. No, no.
We definitely have a lot of more free. We have a lot more freedom with our language now.
Yeah,
which I love to see. I get annoyed easily. Yeah. I'm sorry, everybody, but.
And
Catch Me Outside was like, good Lord.
And then, I don't know, I just also get bored. Like, it's not interesting. Can we move on to the next thing?
Yeah.
And so,
ultimately, it's about comedy, right? Like, how many times can you tell a joke? You can't tell it that many times.
No.
You can't laugh at it, like, full belly laugh that many times.
Yeah. So, it's nice that we have all these different voices.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of, and I mean, yeah, media has a long way to go, but it's far more equitable than it used to be. We had just a very, very few voices at the top. It was very top down, telling us and dictating the content, but now it's more bottom up, and I'm into that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that we have been like, quoting pithy phrases at each other for like an eternity. Certainly, like, I was joking about Britney Spears and the spiritual moment, etc., but like, I think the basis of spiritual religious ceremony is like quoting things all together. So that's a way of bringing people together, and it's something that we've done forever. We're just doing it in a new way.
Great place to end. It's 4 o'clock.
Woo, it's 4 o'clock.
That means it's time for us to go.
It's time for us to nap. Goodbye, and thank you for listening.